Hi, I'm Lily Tomlin. I'm a Pac-Man freak. It's all right. I can talk about it now. Of course, there was a time when I couldn't. As I look back on it, I think it all started that Christmas when someone gave me a digital watch. Then came a Sony Walkman, a cordless telephone, a talking calculator. It wasn't any time at all. I started playing video games. I thought I could handle it. I really did. Then one morning, I woke up on the floor of a video arcade. Everything was a blank. I just couldn't afford this kind of public humiliation again. That's when I brought Pac-Man into my own home.
Welcome, everybody, to slurpcast.com. That's www.slurpcast.com.
Right.
My name's Wes.
I'm the world famous Mark Bernay.
And I'm the brand new Kyle.
Yes, we have a guest on the show. Kyle and I have been talking back and forth about having him come on and do a little segment on the show. And Kyle's joining us for the first time today.
We have to interview him, though, first.
We do?
Yeah, and we the interview questions were established. Wes put
yes.
some ads on Craigslist for a person for the show. And one of the people responded saying nothing whatsoever about himself.
Right.
Except his neck size and his shoe size and his waist size.
He didn't even provide his like age and looks. I mean,
so we figured that that must be important. That's what our audience thinks is important for a new Slurpcast member. So yeah, we rejected him because his shirt size was like 15 and a half.
Yeah.
But his shoe size was 11.
10? Oh, it was 11?
10 or 11.
Okay.
Just didn't seem balanced properly, so we rejected him.
Yeah.
So what about you, Kyle?
Well, you can see me. I'm well balanced.
That's okay. True. Well, I don't know. Let's let the audience decide how well balanced this guy is right here.
Right. Very good.
Absolutely.
Very true.
Yes.
But now I've got a... I wear a large, not too large, 10 and a half on the shoes, and I think a proportionate size on the shirts and pants.
We got Kyle's stats here.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, that's important.
So, audience, please put comments if you like Kyle. And don't consider anything he says from now on. That was the only interview question right there. So just based on that, should we keep him or not?
Yeah, really.
Everything else he says, you got to ignore.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, Kyle, tell us a little bit about your plan for the show, for your portion of the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'll do my best to contribute where I can. It's interesting. I'm constantly debating my geekiness. You know, I mean, my geekdom really stems from my great love of games, video games, and I mean, it's how I got into the industry I'm in. You know, working with computers and all that jazz. So I started off at an early age with just loving video games, going to the roller rink and or any place the Pizza Hut had an arcade game and just hanging out there.
Cool.
Okay. Hopefully, parents tossed in a few quarters my way. I think the obsession really cemented itself, when I got my Nintendo for Christmas one year, and moments after I unwrapped that gift, I came down with a fever, a literal fever, and I was bedridden for the next few days, so I couldn't enjoy my Nintendo. But I think that fever, really, really permanently embedded that obsession.
It was an indicator of what's to come.
Exactly. So, I mean, what I hope to...
Yeah, wouldn't that fever have gotten you out of work or out of school so you could play with the Nintendo all day long?
Unfortunately, I was too sick. But
oh, really?
It was.
You mean you weren't faking it just to get out of school?
No, it was Christmas break. I didn't have school.
Okay.
It was a sad night. My sister comes in trying to convince me to sneak down. In the middle of the night, sneak down and play Super Mario Brothers. And
nice.
And it was a sad, sad thing to have to turn her down. It was a difficult decision. I hope to contribute where I can, where my knowledge or opinion is relevant on any other topics. But yeah, typically my topics will be focused around various gaming, typically around what I guess maybe gamers might consider hardcore gaming. Casual games have their place and stuff like that. They're just, I don't know, to me, they're just so many out there, you know, your Farmville, basically all your various like Facebook apps.
Right.
I can't get into that type of thing, you know, community type games. I don't know.
It's not the real thing.
Yeah, my community is in the arcade room, and so. And so that's where, you know, old school, you know, emulation now, you know, able to, you know, play the old school, you know, on almost any device out there, you know.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we welcome Kyle. Where are we eating?
Out the door.
Out the door Vietnamese restaurant as part of the Westfield Shopping Center.
Yeah.
For San Francisco. And remember, it is not a mall. Malls are centers like this in suburbs. In the city,
wondering.
It's a shopping center.
So
for anything, we haven't yet given out a real URL of a story. When we do, go to slurpcast.com. There will be a blog entry behind each of these recordings where you can look up the URLs we talk about and maybe further information. Sometimes the audio gets posted first. You might get the blog entry later.
That's right. We sometimes post... we're in a pattern where we actually like upload the show first and then we make the show notes later.
Right.
And the only way to get that new show is to subscribe to the iTunes feed. Because if you go to slurpcast.com, you'll get the show for the most recent notes that have been posted.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I digress. What's been going on in the past tech history, Mark, this past week? Anything new?
Well, you want an old item? You like items about old stuff, right?
Right.
There's a website that has Radio Shack catalogs from 1939 to 2005.
Yay!
Almost, not every one, but almost all of them.
Okay. We may have talked about this before, but 1939?
Yeah.
Did you look? Okay. That's awesome.
So, mm-hmm.
That's classic. Scanners? Did they have scanners back then?
Not that early, but they certainly did at some point, yeah. Yeah, Radio Shack had a million scanners at some point, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was going to say, the catalog up until about beginning of 2000 probably fairly consistent. And then they rebranded and went like the sort of Circuit City router.
Okay.
Or to be like,
yeah. Right, now they're what, the Shack?
Yeah.
Are they still calling themselves the Shack, or did that fail miserably and they just dropped the idea?
I don't know.
Is Sci-Fi still calling itself Sci-Fi?
I think so.
The Sci-Fi channel?
Why did they do that? That's so stupid.
Because the only word they could get to get your domain name.
They got sued or something, I bet.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So, you know how some applications for the iPhone and iTouch allow you to check out your Netflix subscriptions?
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think the one that I use is like movie, something, iMovie or some
no, silly now, yeah, now Playing does it.
Apparently, there's now an official Netflix application for the iPad.
What's an iPad?
What's an iPad?
Oh,
well, when you fall off like the play structure at your high school or your grade school, and you skin your knee, you're gonna need to have some kind of thing to cover up the boo-boo from bleeding and stuff. And
right.
Used to be Band-Aids, but you probably at this point would need an iPad.
Okay.
And that'll help heal your
skin. An individual skin boo-boo
knee.
Pad is what it is.
Huh? Yeah.
There's an individual boo-boo pad.
Yeah.
Now, what type of functionality does this provide beyond just basic, you know, keeping the wound clean? Does it report biometrics?
Your friends could autograph it.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Your friends could autograph it.
That's true.
You get a picture of Hello Kitty on
it. Indelible marker.
Yeah, you get a picture of Hello Kitty on it.
Oh,
probably.
That's cute.
Yeah. Anyway, yes. So the iPad is coming out 2 days from now.
Right.
We're recording this on April 1st. You haven't actually seen one yet, but we've seen all kinds of websites about them, obviously.
And this is proof right here, this article, that you'll be able to get when you go to slurpcast.com.
Right.
This is proof that they're already starting to put iPad applications into the app store.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, and it's not clear from the article, if you can actually use this on an iPhone or iTouch, but there was some talk in the stand-up, or this, that you would be able to use these apps would be backwards compatible. Not all of them, but...
Well, the question I have is, and this can go even more generic, but if you buy it for the iPad, would you be able to also install it on the iPod?
Right.
Let's say you're traveling around. You don't have your iPad with you. You need to check your queue.
Well, we know that the iPad will support iPod applications.
Money-wise,
iTouch.
Money-wise, you can have several devices share the same account. So money-wise, certainly,
that's a good point.
If the app works for both of them, yeah.
So we know, like, Amazon will work both on the iPad and the iTouch and the iPhone.
Right.
Right.
And that one's free anyway, but a paid application that exists for all the platforms, you should be able to, as long as you sync them all with the same PC or Mac, you should be able to get them all free, I think.
Huh. So.
What I want, but for the Netflix one, I say just for your Netflix queue and your rental stuff, there's other apps that do that. But the unique thing about the Netflix app itself for the iPad is that you can actually watch the instant videos. You know, if you're a Netflix member, you can watch a whole bunch of movies online.
Okay, right.
So the iPad app will let you watch those movies online.
Right,
on
now
iPad.
That is yeah. That is pretty slick.
The iPhone may not. I don't know if the iPhone will let you do that.
I bet it will. It just will be like, you know, shrunken down video.
Oh, hey. Mm-hmm. So all we had before the iPad.
Yeah.
You know, excluding laptops, of course.
Right. I still want to eat a piece of cake off of the iPad.
Right.
Have some application... Do something when you have a slice of cake sitting on top of the screen.
So we're talking about like a miniature version of the Microsoft Surface.
Yes.
You know, it reacts to the things placed on top of it.
Right.
Anyway.
I never got my rice, I just realized.
Huh?
I never got my broken rice. They're probably still breaking it in the kitchen. Oh, no, it's here. Never mind.
Oh, they did. Yeah, it is.
I do have it. I forgot.
It's in the broken rice bowl.
Bowl, yeah.
So it's basically like you can make a virtual table mat.
Right.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, I want to have, like, a virtual Dixie plate, you know, and then on the Dixie plate, you can put whatever you want. But see, the application's got to be interesting. It's got to guess what you're putting on the plate.
Right.
Or do something like that, you know. Put a piece of cake down.
It's got to make you feel bad about it. It's going to tell you the caloric count.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, so speaking of iPad, I wasn't going to buy one because I already have it. I made a decision a couple of months ago.
Right.
Should I wait for the iPad or buy a netbook?
Uh-huh.
And then when I saw what the iPad was going to be, I went ahead and got the netbook because I didn't think I cared about it that much.
All right.
But now that I see how mainstream the iPad's getting and how many apps are coming out for it, maybe I really should get one after all. But what really convinced me today to maybe get one someday is the iCade, the iPod Arcade Cabinet.
Oh.
It's this little tabletop thing that looks exactly like an old-fashioned video game arcade. You know, it's a wooden thing with controls with a joystick and push buttons and stuff. And you slide the iPad into it, and it becomes a screen. And then when you slide it in, it hits the docking connector down at the bottom and connects it up. And then there's software games that look exactly like the old video games. When you slide the iPod into this device, the joystick and push buttons on the console become the active ones for the game.
Yeah, okay, so...
That just looks really, really cool, huh?
So that looks cool because I saw the printout. Right. It looks really awesome, and it makes me get excited because of all the MAME 32 stuff that exists. But what bothers me though is that Apple has never been really okay with supporting
emulation or anything that requires external data files to run, right?
Exactly. So who cares if the hardware is really, really great? What kind of applications are we going to use?
Here's the idea. It's not going to be a multi-arcade, you know, type of emulator like MAME. You're going to have, you know, out there you've got Pac-Man and Ms. Pac-Man, all the various, you know, single, you know, type things that they're charging $5 for.
Right.
It's actually a bit of my gripe. I'm going to talk a bit more about that.
All right.
Yeah, and some of those will recognize this console and switch over to the controls on it. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's how it works. It's not totally clear how it's going to work.
But I had the same reaction when I saw that. I'm like, finally, I have a reason to pick up an iPad. I was feeling like, again, you know, they said earlier, my geek credentials, you know, were waning because I had no desire for an iPad. I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
Found a gaming reason for it.
But if the existing games have to have like code written to work with the controls in the cabinet.
Yeah, there may not be that many of them.
That's going to kind
of
suck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I would really hope that it would recognize the cabinet as a generic device, and then you could easily just program in your basic your basic controls. I mean, that's really the only way that would really work, especially since there is no real, doesn't seem to be any real standard external interface for it, for any of their mobile devices like that.
Right. That's the other problem with the iPad. It has no universal, there's no device driver support, really. You have to buy special adapter cables for everything.
Right.
There's like 10 different kinds of adapter cables they're going to have.
Do they have like printer drivers at all? They don't.
No.
No, they don't.
No, but there are apps. There have always been iPhone apps that can print certain types of things. The iPad will have that, but not but will not have a universal printer driver. No.
So if the iPad starts to multitask in any at any time in the future, they could put like a TSR or some app that sits in the background and translates the controls stuff, of the joystick, and the push buttons to do certain things based on certain applications.
Right.
I could see that. That would be kind of, that would make it worthwhile.
Yeah. It still seems a little too abstract for your average user. I mean, really, it kind of looks like the realm of a the homebrew hacker type community. You know, that is willing to, you know, figure out how best they can do what they want to do on the, on the iPad. Right. Mm-hmm.
Still, kind of exciting, though. That's kind of cool.
So you can't hack it unless you have a jailbroken one. You can't hack it, though.
That's what I'm saying. It's a tough...
For the phone,
all the cool things you can do with the iPad, you can't do with the iPad.
Right.
Right. So, I'm not a fan of the mobile... the Mobile Me service that Apple offers.
Sure.
I don't know a lot about it other than it's really expensive and it allows you to synchronize all the different, you know, your calendar, bunch of your applications that come with the standard OS. But apparently I got an article here, where did I get it from? Gizmodo, that now Mobile Me will not only find or erase your stolen iPhone, but your iPad will your iPad now as well.
Which is the same account, or do you have to spend another $100?
Yeah, it's the same account. I guess it's I mean, come on, $99 a year for this application for this service that you can pretty much get for free through Google and some other related services.
Are you saying that the Droid has like similar type functionality?
Yeah, you can link, you can sync it with your Google account.
Right.
So.
It's time to bring up my pet peeve. And why am I the only one in the world who feels that way? Let's see what you guys think. I claim that all devices should have a way to have your name and phone number on the front of it. When someone turns it on, but it's still locked, it should display your name and contact information so someone can get it back to you.
That's a good point. You can do that with the, you can do that with your iPhone and your iPad
easily.
Oh, there's an application for it that lets you take any image and save that as your screen.
Right.
So when you first turn it on, it comes up and has your information.
Yeah,
your phone
do
number
that.
Stuff like that.
I do that, but it is true you can do that, but it's so kludgy. Why doesn't the iPhone just have that built into the OS?
Yeah, that's true.
And when you first get a new one, it asks you what's your name and contact information. It just always displays that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Especially jailbreak. There's all kinds of jailbreak apps that take the place of the lock screen.
Right, right.
And those will not do. I've talked to some of the authors of those.
Yeah.
And they refuse to do a function to show to know contact information. And their basic attitude is, no one would ever return it anyway. Why waste your time? But I think that's crazy because I think there are a lot of honest people in the world who would if they could find you easily. You know.
Yeah.
If a priest finds it, he might return it. I had a religious guy when I'm back in the Newton days. By the way, the name of the application I'm talking about that actually lets you create an image with your contact information.
There's several of them, actually.
Yeah, there are. The one that I use is called If Found Plus.
Okay. No, but the other problem with those image ones is I put a password on the phone. So, again, it's an Apple problem. There's very little room on the screen where the wallpaper shows through when you have... when you have a password on it. So, yeah, as a matter of fact, all the lock screen, all the jailbreak lock screen information apps totally ignore the fact that some people put a password on, and they even crash. They even crash them, and they get very sick if you have a password on.
Huh.
Yeah. I mess around with some of that stuff. It's probably why my browser is so unstable.
Yeah.
I mean, it constantly crashes.
Right.
Even when I'm doing nothing.
Okay.
All right, so I'm almost done.
Okay.
So another application. Maybe I should save this one for the application section.
Do non-iPhone things.
Yeah,
first.
I'll do non-iPhone.
We spend too much time on iPhones.
Okay, Google receives more than 1,100 community responses for gigabit fiber network.
Okay.
So what did they do that was special today, Mark?
Well, one of the responses was...
No, what did Google do?
Well, first of all, I know.
Yeah, okay.
But explain what it's all about.
Okay.
Google has offered to take, like, one city as a sample and pay out of their own money. They'll pay for that city. to put in all fiber to the curb so that all the residents of that city can get high-speed internet.
Now, is it for all the homes in that city? Or
I think that's what their plan is, yeah.
Okay, I didn't know it was, like, to the house.
Well, yeah, that's what I said. But.
Okay. All right.
And I'm not sure if it'll be free to the residents or just... Or Google will just finance the capitalization of the putting of the fiber.
All right.
So the city of Topeka, Kansas, to try to get in their application, offered to rename the city to the name Google because they'd be so proud. If the Google would choose them,
right,
they'd rename the name. So Google's front homepage today, instead of saying the word Google, has the word Topeka. And Google's blog explains that in honor of Topeka being willing to do that, they're changing the company name to Topeka today. So,
but of course, today's April Fool's. So.
Right. I have an Albert A story about Topeka.
All right.
I forget the whole story. But we had a friend in Seattle named Peter Pimple, who was very, very secretive. He was popular on the phone lines up there.
Yeah.
But very, very secretive about who he was. So when he left Seattle, we didn't want to say where he moved to. We told everyone he moved to Topeka, Kansas.
Okay.
But he actually moved to San Francisco, to the Bay Area. I can tell that now.
Okay.
So Al Bernay and I always use the word Topeka as a code name for San Francisco. So.
Do you know that it's okay to tell everybody that Peter Pimple moved to San Francisco?
Yeah, because he's not here anymore.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I just want to make sure that was okay.
I'm usually willing to give out his address where he was 10 years ago or something.
We could go stalk him.
Yeah.
That would be kind of fun.
Right.
I actually talked to him on the phone once.
Did you?
Yeah.
Huh.
Peter Pimple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about?
Wait, wasn't he the guy that carried the bottle of water?
Maybe.
Yeah, and he was like...
Oh, yeah, I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, that's a story for another time.
Right.
All right, anyway.
Right.
So I just kind of thought that was interesting.
Right.
It shows how popular the internet is when you have all these different cities vying for this high-speed internet.
Right.
Well, I mean, that's a massive get. I mean, the cost of implementing that much fiber.
Yeah.
I guess it's just like a prototype of what the future could bring in order to spur it into existence.
Well, whatever happened to Internet 2?
IPv6?
No, I mean Internet 2, which I don't... I thought I've never heard about that before, IPv6, although it might be related.
What was that supposed to be?
Used in education, around like different like universities. It was like the ultimate in like...
Oh, because there was too much spam on the internet, so...
I thought that it was really... What its deal was, it was just, like, an extremely fast internet. Mm-hmm. You know, prototype of, like, what it would be like to be able to stream instantly and all that stuff.
Didn't they have it running in universities?
Yeah.
Some kind of...
Yeah, but I'm not
really,
sure.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting, because you don't hear about it anymore.
No, but there's some movement at one point, and because of all the spam on the internet... Remember, the internet started at the university connecting thing. For government agencies and the universities only. And then they let the public in and all the spam started and stuff. But supposedly some universities are going to build a new network privately just for them. So maybe that's Internet 2, I forget.
In honor of Kyle being here, I pulled this one article, and it's quick.
Okay.
It's a book that I think everybody who likes video games needs to have and get a hold of.
Mm-hmm.
It's on Amazon. It's called Video Games, An Insider Look at the History of Grand Theft Auto, Super Mario, and the Most Influential Games of All Time.
Okay.
I'll put this link in the show notes.
Is it available on Kindle now?
It doesn't say.
Well, is it one of those dead tree things?
It's only $14.56. So be sure to check it out.
But you have to carry this dead tree thing with you to read it?
Yeah.
Forget that. Yeah.
Let's see here.
I'm still enjoying reading novels on my iPhone, and I don't know why people want dead tree stuff. I really don't get it.
Dead tree stuff?
I'm perfectly happy reading novels on the iPhone.
Dead tree stuff can not only educate you, but also it keeps you warm when you need to light it on fire.
The great thing is I can hand the book over to somebody else and say, you should read this.
Yes. You know what?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely,
but,
man.
But I was, it was part of the big debate when the iPod was announced. I'm like, okay, I've got my iPhone, my iPod, my DS, my PSP, and the book I'm carrying around.
Right.
I suppose they would like to argue that the iPad will replace all that stuff, but I just, that's like one more device.
No, but the iPhone replaces all that stuff. Because you can read books on the iPhone perfectly adequately.
That's true.
See, for textbooks with graphs and pictures, it's a different story. But just for novels, that has just a long stream of words, and you don't care how many words are in a page.
Yeah, right. I certainly don't.
The iPhone screen works perfectly. I have no problem whatsoever reading novels on it.
Yeah, I can actually read.
Yeah.
I have a couple of O'Reilly applications slash books for the iTouch.
Right.
And I can read them pretty well. The font size is pretty big. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but the diagrams, but see, stuff like that would tend to have a lot of diagrams, so is that okay?
No, there's diagrams in there. They work.
Okay.
Yeah. So now let's hand the mic over to Kyle.
Well, I don't.
Do we have only one mic we're handing around? Is that what we're saying?
That's right.
Okay.
I mean, I basically what I want to talk about today was the Xbox Game Room.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily Xbox, Microsoft Live Game Room.
Okay.
Really, because it works on both PC and the Xbox. I don't know if you guys have heard of it.
It's like an app that you download for the PC?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can download for the 360 and the PC.
Okay.
And basically what it gives you, it's like a virtual arcade. You know, you can buy, and there's a, right now you can basically you can download packs of arcade games, and right now they actually the packs that they include have like various Atari games, some Konami games, and whatnot, and even include some Atari 2600 games. So it's really starting off with some really just old school games. I think Outlaw is one of them. That's one I remember. Two guys on opposite sides of the field shooting at each other with very
like
square
the stick
bullets.
Figure
yeah,
guys.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Atari 2600.
Yeah, and you got the cart going through the middle.
Yeah.
I played that in the arcade on a road trip growing up when I was in the second grade. That was a good time. So the arcade's pretty cool. I mean I like the idea of it. I just don't know again if I could ever be happy with an official sort of the application like this, because I just don't think that they go far enough. I mean, if you compare what the Live Game Room has compared to like your typical like MAME, you know, if you download all your marquee packs and your cabinet packs and control, I mean, there's so much
awesome.
Just depth you can sort of re-experience about the arcade experience. Especially if you tie in this other thing that I was going to mention briefly, which is the Arcade Ambience Project. Which is this fellow on the web has put together four distinct time periods, eras of games, and basically created this sort of ambience of as he describes it, of being in an arcade. So it's got arcade games from like 81, 83, 86, and 92. And for the representing the different games of those eras, he's got the whir of the machines, the sound of the coin machines. You know, he played around with audio, so there's like a real sense of like depth of the room that you're in. Pretty
wild. Did you hear the other kids in the room though?
You know, I only get
coins going into other game machines and stuff like that.
I only got a chance to listen to the 1980, I think it was 1981 or something like that set just for a brief while, and it was literally just in the background. So I didn't get to hear if there were any people in there, but I guess that's what you bring to the room. You just gotta bring people over, talk games. So that's just another aspect of like really recreating that arcade experience. Basically what you've got with the Live Game Room is you've got all these games that you can download. It works for both the PC and the 360. You can buy the games for either or both. And it's about 240 Microsoft points, which is about $3 I think in English money, American money.
Yeah.
No, but instead of charging you for the games, in a real arcade, you don't have to pay anything. You just walk in, look around, and pay quarters if you choose to play the game.
So you're saying, can I get the ambience and not play any games?
Yeah, you should be able to get the ambience and a whole bunch of games in there.
You don't get the ambience. I mean, that's one of my criticisms. It's very static how you're able to sort of move around the room. It's got a preset sort of rail. You cannot like look around a cabinet, like sort of like stand in front of it and like kind of look at the sides. To me, you know, it's like hanging out at the side of a cabinet was, you know, a big part of just like watching people play and stuff like that. You know? So not being able to like maneuver around in the room is really disappointing. I've only actually downloaded it for the PC so far, but I suspect that it's literally the same thing.
Can you put string on your quarter and pull it back out again and get a free game? Or?
That would be pretty sweet. It's actually, I don't know how much a game. So I guess the idea is that you can basically sample. The idea is you set up your own arcade. You can put the cabinets in however you want in a specific way, but you can sort of put whatever cabinets you want next to each other.
Okay.
You know, in and you can also visit your friend's game room, which is nice. So you can play games that he's purchased.
Okay.
But I believe you only get one demo, and then they start charging you like quarters if you want to continue playing it, or you can just buy it for $240 or 400 Microsoft points if you want it to work on both platforms.
Okay.
I kind of, in some way, dislike that idea that they have this like sort of tiered pricing, but I also sort of applaud the fact that they are at least trying to cater to this because the music industry gets a lot of grief for the way that they deal with you know, multiple versions, you know, 8-track, you know, vinyl, tape, CD, you know, like all those different, you know, formats you've had to rebuy throughout the years. Mm-hmm. Well, if you think about classic arcade games, how many times have we put the quarters in when we were kids?
Yep.
We bought the poor ports, you know, on the Atari 2600 and eventually the Nintendo and all that stuff, you know, and every step of the way we're dropping down money. Right. And here we are, still dropping down money.
Yeah.
And
man, arcade games were the reason why some of my generation actually got jobs.
Okay.
Because of them running out of money.
Oh, I see.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what better, you know, and get a job at a place that had a couple arcade machines, even better.
Yeah.
7-Eleven, man.
You know, I mean, it's kind of neat, and I'm kind of interested to see, like, what kind of things they're going to be able to do to encapsulate the arcade experience. I mean, skee ball. That could be a great use of the of Microsoft Natal, their camera, you know, sort of interactive-based, you know, system.
Okay.
I know what you call that sort of virtual reality type thing that you know, Sony and Microsoft are coming out with.
That's going to be huge.
The Natal and the Move and those sort of things, definitely. Mm-hmm. Well, that's for
but
another.
Can you cheat like you can on a Wii? Well, I don't normally play games. I went to a friend's house had a Wii, and he was doing the bowling game.
Right.
And he was standing up and doing all the maneuvers and telling me this is how you have to do it, and he was really careful to swing his arm. And I found if I just lay down on the couch and wiggle the controller a little bit, I could do exactly the same thing.
Yeah,
and I was beating him. He was taking all the trouble, and I was just lying on the couch, twiddling my hand.
So
can these other ones do that same thing?
Well, I mean, it's all fairly recently announced, but I think, you know, it's very definitely possible. But
well, it's a different technology. Like, Natal is going to encompass a whole lot more than just, you know, motion from a hand to help.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the way that the Natal and the Move work together, I mean, or not work together, but I mean, work, you know, compared to like the Wii.
Okay.
I mean, they're light years ahead of it in the sense that, you know, having a camera that can sort of visualize the space you're in.
Right.
In both the Move and the Natal, and the Natal is literally a camera. I mean, that's all it is. It's some sort of, you know, camera device. So that one might be a little more difficult to tweak. But the Move, maybe. Like, that one's going to have a wand-like device, very similar to the Wii.
Huh.
I mean, I'm fascinated to see what they do. I think the you know, the cameras and stuff like that definitely just give more possibilities in the Wii. The Wii is really antiquated. I thought it was even before it came out, with its limited interaction with the actual device. There is literally like no interaction with the device. It's your Wii reads lights. Your Wiimote just reads the lights from under your you know, from the sensor bar, and it's like. The console has no concept of really what's happening. It's very limited. But you know, and there's also another thing I like about the game room. To go back to that whole topic of how you know, throughout the years, throughout the generations of video game systems, we've always had to, you know, I think like the PS1 had their like arcade collection, you know, sets of like, you know, Williams collections and Capcom collections and stuff like that. You know, it's like every console comes out, you have to rebuy it. I'm hoping that since this, you know, since the game room is on both PC and 360, that it'll be more universal and, and more just kind of encapsulate, you know, be an environment in and of itself that will move from technology to technology as we go forward, and you will always sort of have your games with you that you know you've acquired along the way. I mean, that would be a sweet.
Are they going to do any multi-user games where you can play with other people in the arcade?
And that's another thing. Yeah. You can visit your friend's arcade game. Okay. I mean, arcade, and play them in two-player games and stuff like that. Okay. I don't, you know, again, I haven't played, messed around with any of the multiplayer stuff, but it's definitely. Okay. You know, I mean, as they try and capture the authentic arcade experience, I think it's just going to get more closer and closer. You know, what you're familiar with, and I'm really hoping that they break you off the rails at some point and let you just really set up a cool arcade.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
but I mean, you know, other things that you can do, you can. And they can nickel and dime you because you can buy like little game avatars from different games. Like Adventure Adventure is one of the games that they've released. So one of the things that you can do to decorate your arcade is get these little game avatars. I think they're at least 50 cents each.
Okay.
So it's like it'd be kind of neat if you like bought like the big bundle, like the dual pack for both PC and 360, that it would come with like that little thing as an extra sort of bonus. Right. I mean, at least give you something.
Right.
But it's kind of cool. Like one of the things that they have is I don't know if you've all played the Adventure. It's one of the classic games.
2600 Adventure, right?
2600 in television. I mean, it was
no mainframe. IBM mainframe.
No. Well, is this the text adventure game or
No.
It's Atari 2600.
Yeah, it's basically a square block going around fighting a going through castles, getting the key from the dragon.
Yeah.
That's one of the things. The iconic dragon from Adventure is one of its little game avatars that you can get with it. Kind of neat, something to decorate your room with, but I don't know if I really want to pay money for that.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll buy that on a T-shirt maybe, but not necessarily for my virtual arcade.
Sure. Huh.
So what about the era? This is more. I saw this more overseas than you never caught on the United States that much. But the era of the things called internet cafes, but they're really a bunch of PCs that could, in theory, go on the internet. But the patrons were really a bunch of kids just playing multi-user PC games and stuff.
They're here. My nephew was big into his local LAN cafe that you know, he'd play at the time the original Modern Warfare all the time. Absolutely.
Nice.
And in that sense, you know, trying to capture that, encapsulate that community, that or capture that community, that just the sense of being with other people, you know, which you don't get, you know, it's going away, you know, with you know all the online gaming, you know, you're all very very distant from each other.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm really curious. I mean, it's kind of curious where we're going to be in 30 years when we've lost the ability to read body language.
Right.
Effectively,
okay.
Or properly, or body language has sort of developed into its own little niche, you know, little microcosms depending on your communities, you know, like it's really sort of abstracted from, you know.
Okay. Well, people are blaming computers and video games for the reason why our obesity rate in the United States with kids has skyrocketed.
Right.
So that's the other thing that we got to combat here is figuring out ways to get people off their butts. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, your Wii, your various, you know, interactive, like, you know, Natal and Move.
Yeah.
That's basically the first step.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I agree.
Obviously, those old school, like, exercise bike
games,
quote-unquote games.
Right.
You know, we're I guess, the precursor. Yeah. But
And Wii's not really that much of an exercise
device.
It's people say, oh, it's great, but...
And it's because it's because of its limited interactivity.
Uh-huh.
You know, it can't... It just doesn't have the ability to capture, you know, the environment so completely that you can really move like
when
that.
When I can invite my ex-girlfriend over to my house and play in the Natal some karate game and really physically beat the crap out of her, I'm all for it.
Okay. Well, my friend was just telling me about this vest that supposedly... will really deliver, you know, virtual punches or you know, bullet shots. I mean, like pain, like the type of experience you'd have if you were shot in a Kevlar vest.
That's okay. A lawsuit waiting to happen.
I didn't read any details on it, but if the way he described it is accurate, who wants that?
Yeah. That's all it takes is one person to die because of a virtual, like...
Yeah, if it hits you in the heart.
Yeah, I mean...
Based on the timing, it could kill you if it hits you in the heart.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like bruised, that's playing awesome. Games, yeah. You know, with your keyboard and mouse, your gamepad.
Well, that's because you're losing. If you're a winner, you wouldn't have that problem.
All right, so do we want to move on to applications? iPhone?
How much time do we have?
42. We got 15 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. So I have a bunch of other non-iPhone app items. Maybe I better hold them.
Yeah.
They're running late. Yeah. Okay. So I'll skip everything about my iPhone items then.
All right. So you want to do crap iPhone apps or?
Well, I have one serious one.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll do serious.
That. I don't really drive that much anymore, but I'm interested in the iPhone navigation applications, and they're really the iPhone applications, you know, navigation ones that give turn-by-turn instructions, that speak the instructions, tend to be really expensive. But MapQuest, now, if you remember MapQuest, they were the popular mapping site on the internet before Google Maps.
Uh-huh.
Well, MapQuest has a navigation app now. No, the turn-by-turn app, turn-by-turn for free.
Okay.
They have a chargeable version that they rent by the month, but the free one will do simple turn-by-turn instructions.
Very cool.
Turning instructions? Well, did you hear about the...
I forget what the limitations are, but it's got some,
Did you hear about the Snoop Dogg? He voiced one of those...
Oh, really? Tom?
I don't know who it was,
Tom
but
Tom
it was...
Tom tends to do that with famous people.
Yeah.
Right.
You could...
Make a left turn.
Yeah, well, I want Mario.
That's cool.
And the other one, I forgot the name of the app. I think it's Navagon. Navagon used to be one of the 100R ones.
Okay.
And they broke themselves down by region, three different regions. So you don't have to buy the whole country for $100 now. You can buy one region, one third of the country for $30.
That's kind of cool that you only pay for that.
Yeah. But then the MapQuest one, I forget the limitation of their free one. But they give you some turn-by-turn stuff, but probably low quality or very limited in what it does.
Okay.
Anyways, so now, my favorite part of the show, where I discuss, because you can buy navigation on any platform, there's nothing special about the iPhone.
Right.
But there's certain apps that are kind of unique to the iPhone. There are, after all, 170,000 apps now, maybe 180,000. And some of them are so critically important that you should choose the iPhone platform simply because of them. For example, there's one called A1 Clap Clock Mechanus. It's a combination of a flashlight and a clock.
Okay.
But the great thing about it is that you clap, and it hears you clapping, and it turns the flashlight on. So remember the clapper on TV?
It's still advertising. It's a clapper for the...
To turn the light. Yeah, nice. So it's kind of a clapper to turn your nightlight on if you need it. Insulter, it insults people. You tell them about people you know, and it'll give you insults for them.
Okay. Is that like Mad Libs or something?
You're like, your face constantly looks like it's sneezing, John. Or something. I don't know.
Now, that would be an indispensable app.
Yeah, I know.
Is an iPhone application that listens to your conversation and chimes in when you're supposed to, like, respond to something witty.
Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
So I should have thought that. Never again.
Yeah. Tell me how to do that someday.
I want an iPhone app that, like, you give it all kinds of stuff about your friends. Like, it goes through your contact list, and you say all kinds of negative stuff about your friends.
Right.
And then, like, once a month, maybe you can set up the occurrence. Uh-huh. Once in a while, it'll send out an email to random people in your contact, putting together random insults based on what you said about those contacts.
That'd be funny, yeah.
I like that.
But email from you or forge it from someone else?
Yeah, let's forge it. Like, have it, like, forged from one person randomly in the contact list to another random person once a month.
Yeah, okay.
I like that.
That'd be fun,
That'd be better, because then it doesn't get back to you.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to say randomly. What if you're in the middle of a fight and it just decides to extend it?
Right.
You know, pour gas on that one.
Yeah. Then there's a good, I love fart apps, so there's a fart app now called Fun Fart Restaurant.
Okay.
Where you put in the ingredients that you want to cook with.
Okay.
And it'll generate farts based on how those ingredients react with people.
Yeah, right. Okay. All right.
And then you see visual representation of the farts floating around the room.
Finally, a purpose for that smell-o-vision, you know, right. we're supposed to be getting.
If I cook spaghetti with these ingredients, what are my farts going to be like?
Exactly.
Let's go to the application.
That's right, yeah.
There's an app for
that. Can be pretty important.
Do they give you chemical, maps, diagrams?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then one called Poop Pong. You like old-fashioned games. This is the old-fashioned game of Pong. But using a lump of poo instead of a ball.
This is really crap.
Yeah, I know.
That's what we used to do back in the day. You know, we ran out of rocks.
Right.
You just kind of dig around for cat crap. Poo.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Nice.
And one called plunger, where you can flush people. If people piss you off, you can flush them down the toilet.
Huh. That could be sort of the prototype for what I was talking about. When you need to respond, just click. Flush them down the toilet.
Oh, okay.
And you got to respond in a quick manner.
Nice.
Okay.
All right. Well, I got an application.
We usually do serious apps. Your favorite serious app of the week, if you have any.
Well, I got an app. I'm going to throw out there. My app. I was in a situation where I had to figure out somebody's birthday.
Right.
I knew when they were born, but I couldn't do the math. I was in the middle of doing something and. A couple of things were going on at the same time.
Do you have an app for that?
Yes, I do.
Actually. Oh, my gosh.
It's pretty incredible. And not only do I have an app for that, but the app that I have is free.
Really?
You don't have to pay any single money at all. Any cents, nothing.
Uh-huh.
It's called, and believe it or not, the name actually matches what it does.
Okay.
It's called Age Calculator.
Okay.
So, you launch this thing, comes up, you got your standard iPhone,
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yep. Somebody was born on October 1st, 1986.
Okay.
They're going to be, their next birthday is in 182 days, 5 hours, 1 minute, and 50 seconds.
Huh. Okay. They're,
according to this, they're 23 years and 6 months and 8 days old.
Huh. Okay.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a good little application.
Yeah, I mean, you get the specifics about literally.
Way about, more detail than you really even friggin' need.
It's a good sort of reminder of your mortality.
It's somebody's prototype to figuring out how to make iPhone applications.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are these supposed to be legitimate?
How do I use Objective-C? Well, let me just write an age calculator.
Yeah, I know. It better be free. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I saw an app. The most recent app that I saw that really fascinated me was something, I forget where I saw it, but someone has shown me a sleep cycle for the iPhone. And using its accelerometer, you sleep with it next to you, your iPhone next to you, and you can also, they also have official watch devices you can wear that are probably better, but this is actually something I think goes, use the accelerometer of your iPhone.
Right. Uh-huh.
Detect what level of sleep you're at.
Okay.
It will record like how often you go into REM sleep.
But by sound, because we wasn't listening on the microphone and do stuff like that.
So I don't know if it does anything like that, but ultimately, what I think its purpose is, other than it's got multiple purposes. I think one of the fascinating things is understanding how you're sleeping. Are you sleeping as well as you should be?
Right.
Yeah. Are you managing to go in REM sleep, enough in the night, or is something bothering you? I don't know.
But you strap it onto your arm for the motion?
That's a good question. I don't know if that would enhance the iPhone version.
But how else would it know? If we're just sitting next to you, how would it know what you're doing?
Maybe it's your pillow.
I think it's by how often you toss and turn and stuff like that. So it just knows by how still it is, and therefore, it's the iPhone version probably isn't going to be necessarily as sensitive or effective as the wristwatch version, but one of the things it does, which is really nice, is for the morning time, when you basically give it a range of when you want it to start waking you up and when you want it to definitely wake you up, and so you have this range, and it's going to say at some point in that range, it's going to be able to detect when you're at your lightest sleep, it'll wake you up at that point, so that you'll wake up refreshed as opposed to out of just a deep sleep that you just have to claw your way out.
You know the name of it?
Sleep cycle.
Sleep cycle. Okay.
Yeah.
It's one of
those
for
the show notes. Yeah, I've seen that. I think I've seen that.
But then I'm going to want to go back to sleep.
Right.
No.
I mean, I've been kind of into that whole idea of like lucid dreaming and stuff like that. And this is, you know, one of those sort of applications that helps sort of like help you understand what your sleep patterns like and how you can more effectively sleep. I mean,
but it won't give you a trigger. You know, for the lucid dreams, they sometimes have devices that give a trigger when you're. To try to notice.
You know, I don't know if it necessarily is itself meant to enhance lucid dreaming. It's just to help. I mean, one thing it can do is help you understand your dreaming pattern and you know whether you're getting enough REM sleep. Excuse me. And I think those are neat devices too. But I haven't seen anything like that for the iPhone.
The accelerometer is that sensitive because you remember how I can believe this would work because the
seismograph one.
The seismograph,
that's true. Yeah,
that
that's
is really true. Sensitive. That's I have true, that application. Yeah. It's free, and it uses the accelerometer to.
I heard about that recently.
Yeah. It uses that to show you how the iPhone or iTouch
is
moving.
That's true. Yeah.
And it draws basically on graph paper. Here it is. Right here, it draws the.
Oh my
motions.
Gosh, we're having like an eight.
That's because you're shaking the.
No,
I'm but you can sit it down on the table and just touch the table, and you'll see that. Yeah.
It see how it's like now. It's. Yeah. It's pretty amazing, actually.
That is. Yeah. I mean, really cool.
Yeah. Okay. And it's free. Free.
Now, is it as good as a frog? I heard that. I read an article the other day about they discovered that frog, a certain type of frog. At least they haven't necessarily verified it, but is that the interesting correlation that they're saying? And if it's actually a correlation, I'm not sure. Where they were watching during like the height of the breeding season in this one region. All these frogs just disappear. I mean, they were like losing frogs when they should be getting more and more frogs.
Okay. Right?
And they started tracking them to these other all these different sort of breeding areas.
Right.
5 days later, an earthquake hit.
Okay.
And it wasn't until the last aftershock that the population started to slowly return.
Okay.
Now I thought frogs were going down around the world anyway, though. That could be coincidence.
That's the thing. That's why I'm saying it could just be some sort of false correlation,
right?
You know, but I don't know.
But did they put seismographs in the same place?
This was just sort of their initial observation, just by coincidence, you have an earthquake around there. So they're like, why are all these frogs leaving? And then you have the earthquake, and you're like, and then they come back and like, oh, maybe there's a pattern.
Oh,
here.
Maybe
it's just the beginnings of some possibilities.
Was earthquake big enough to hurt the frogs anyway?
It was a 6.1. It supposedly killed people in its area. It's interesting. A frog maybe have the ability to detect, pre-seismic type activities.
Okay. Right?
Like, they said possibly, like, radon gas emissions and stuff like that.
Huh. Cool stuff. Yeah. Interesting. All right, anything more, Mark?
So I have a Sirius app. I like apps that are for Google Reader that synchronize the iPhone with Google Reader on the web. For your RSS feeds, so you can read articles on the web or on your iPhone and never read the same article in both places because they know about each other. So my latest favorite one is called Reader, R-E-E-D-E-R.
Okay.
What's good about Reader, I like ones that can email the entire article. If you want to send an email to yourself, if you have an article you like, I can send it to myself to remind myself about that article.
Okay.
And Reader will send entire articles or a link to the article, and it'll cache the pictures offline and stuff like that. So yeah, it just has a good set of features, so I like it.
Okay, cool.
What else? That's probably the main one I've been using new lately. Yeah.
All right, so let's rate this place.
Okay.
So this is out the door. We're here on April Fool's.
Right.
April 1st. This is a place that's always been pretty good.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed their food. My only issue is they're really on the high end of the price scale.
Yeah.
Well, you know that they're like a sister restaurant or brother restaurant or some sort of, relation to the Sliding Door, which is a real fancy Vietnamese fusion restaurant down, I think, by the bay.
Okay.
I've been there once.
Yeah.
If you get like Vietnamese sandwiches, those sandwiches, they're like $2, right? On the East Bay.
Right.
Down the street at Dolce, pay about $4.50, which is kind of high.
Do they even have sandwiches?
They're here for like $8 to $10.
Yeah,
which is kind of high.
Uh-huh. Definitely.
But good food, I gotta say.
Like my meal that was one appetizer and one dish is gonna be like $20 almost, I bet.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what I like about it is, I guess I like the fact that it's Vietnamese fusion. You know, one of the things I discovered that I really don't like, and my favorite dish here that I typically is the dish I typically get is their beef noodle soup,
right?
Traditionally known as pho.
It's good.
And your traditional pho will have, you know, like a fish sauce. It's really just kind of overpowering, in my opinion. They don't appear to use that here, and I think it just makes the broth that much better. And definitely, it's a fantastic.
It was good.
Very good. Yeah.
All right, so we're coming near to the end of the show. Want to thank you guys for listening. Again, if you're interested in the show notes or you want to make a comment, because we do have a blog, it's www.slurpcast.com.
And remember, you can only judge me by my answers to the initial interview. Everything else that came after that is what it is.
So leave comments about Kyle.
About Kyle?
Yeah. Should we advertise a Craigslist again, or should we keep him?
We should. Nice.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle, thanks for joining.
Absolutely. Guys. My pleasure.